Hi guys, and welcome to another edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. For tonight's show, I think we're going to do a bit of a switch. Instead of Rick and I working together, Rob and Rick are going to work together. So, without further ado, we switch it from El Centro, California to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Rob, tell us what you're playing for us tonight.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everybody. I'm Rob Hancock, and welcome to my portion of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Our first program this evening is, from the year 1950, Dr. Christian, and the episode is Don't Look Down.
Dr. Christian's office.
Vaseline Program, the only show in radio where the audience writes the scripts. Stories right from the heart of America, written by the people of America, woven around that beloved American character, the family doctor. Tonight, the honors and prize money go to Mrs. Toby Raymond of St. Louis, Missouri, for her play, Don't Look Down, starring Jean Hersholt as Dr. Christian, with Rosemary DeCamp in the role of Judy Price. Fellas, let's really face facts. When the fair sex glance your way, do they sigh?
Ooh.
Or are you the double trouble guy that makes them think?
Uh-oh, dry scalp.
If your hair is flecked with loose dandruff, it's stubborn or hard to comb, you probably have that old double trouble dry scalp. And you need Vaseline Hair Tonic. It gives double care to scalp and hair. A few drops of Vaseline Hair Tonic used each morning will check that dry scalp pronto. First, it relieves loose dandruff and that tight, dry scalp feeling by supplementing the natural scalp oils. Next, it makes your hair look neater and handsomer than ever before. And a little Vaseline Hair Tonic goes a long way. Just a few drops do the trick. The large economy size is only 73 cents. Other sizes, 41 and 25 cents plus tax. Get a bottle of Vaseline Hair Tonic today. Now for our prize play, Don't Look Down. And it begins in Dr. Christian's familiar office in the old White House on the corner of State Street and the River Road. Judy Price, the doctor's confidential secretary nurse, has been holding down the fort alone for a few days while Dr. Christian attended a medical assembly in New York. But he's expected back any minute now, and Judy has arranged fresh chrysanthemums on the table in the waiting room and dusted the doctor's office for the third time this morning. Ah, there's the welcome step at the door now.
Hello, Judy. I'm back.
Oh, Dr. Christian, it's so good to see you. Here, let me take your bag. How are you anyway? Did you have a good trip? You look rested and refreshed. You tell me all about everything. I can't wait to hear.
So I see. You're talking a mile a minute.
Oh, am I? Well, things have been pretty quiet around here. I haven't had anyone to talk to.
Now, how are all the patients?
Oh, they're all doing well at the moment. For once, we didn't have any excitement at all in your absence.
That's good, because I had no excitement on my trip.
I suppose it is exciting to meet a lot of your doctor friends and talk over new medical discoveries and see a lot of exhibits.
Oh, that was not the excitement I was referring to, although I did enjoy the meeting, of course.
Then what excitement do you mean? Something special happened?
I'll say, New York is an extraordinary place. Sort of a boiling cauldron compared to Rivers End.
But what was it? You weren't robbed, I hope.
Oh, now, Judy, you know I have nothing of value to attract robbers.
I know. You were called in on a murder case.
Why, Judy, is that all New York means to you? Robbers and murders?
Well, if you read the papers, you'd think so, too. Anyway, what happened? The suspense is killing me.
Oh, it's a long story, and perhaps not patience to see me this morning.
No, sir, not one. I wasn't sure which plane you'd come in on, so I kept the morning clear of appointments. So no more excuses now. You sit down in your armchair, tell me the whole thing from the beginning, and don't leave out any details.
All right. Have you got any coffee?
You know I have, Doctor. Getting it hot on the electric plate. I'll get it.
Yeah. You're a nice girl to come home to, Judy. Some young man is missing a good bed.
Here's your coffee, piping hot. Now, let's hear about your big adventure in New York.
Well, as a matter of fact, the medical convention was really over. In fact, I was just checking out at the desk at the hotel when I heard one of the patients calling my name.
Dr. Christian. Dr. Christian?
Yes, boy, I'm here. What is it?
Would you follow me, please, Dr. Christian? Mr. Chester, the hotel manager, must see you immediately. He said to tell you it's very urgent. He's on the 30th floor.
Mr. Chester was in room 3014, but I couldn't see him at first because the room was swarming with newsmen, photographers, and policemen. Then I saw him standing by the window with one of the police officials. I knew Alex Chester pretty well because he used to live in Riverside. Maybe that's why he called me that day, or perhaps it was because most of the other doctors attending the convention had already checked out. Mr. Chester seemed on the verge of a nervous collapse. At first, I thought he needed my professional services. Then he spoke.
Oh, this is terrible, Dr. Christian, simply terrible. You'll have to do something.
If you could tell me what the trouble is, Alex.
Well, he's out there. He crawled clear to the end of that narrow ledge. He's got us all in a sweat. This is going to be bad for the hotel.
I'm Lieutenant Donnell of the police department, Dr. Christian. That man out there is just making up his mind to commit suicide. You think you could talk to him?
Well, I guess I could try. Who is he?
He registered early this morning. His name's Joel Lentz. He's been out there for a couple of hours.
Well, the ledge is very narrow, you see, and if you want to talk to him, you have to crawl out there after him on your hands and knees. But there is that little rail to hold onto.
Has anyone talked to him yet?
Well, I went out there a little while ago, but our friend Joe doesn't like cops. There isn't much we can do. We've got the fire department standing by, but it's a long way to the ground.
Well, have you notified his wife or his family?
His wife and sister are on the way up now.
Well, then, about all I can do is to get out there and talk to him myself.
Christian! Great Scott, the doctor's going out there, too. He might fall. Stop him, Lieutenant. Stop him. If anything happened to Dr. Christian, my name would be mud in River's End.
I think the doctor will be all right if he doesn't look down.
Say, fellow, this is harder than it looks. Mind if I join you out here for a while, Joe?
You a cop?
No, I'm not a cop.
Guess you're a newspaper guy, then. Looking for a story, aren't you?
No, Joe, I'm not a newspaper man. I'm a doctor, and I live in River's End. I'd like to help you.
Like doing what, for instance? Like talking me into going back in there?
Oh, isn't there something I could get for you? It's pretty windy out here. Wouldn't you like a coat?
No, I'm not cold. It's kind of cold this morning, but it's real nice now. I like it out here. Look at them cars down there. Crawling along like little black ants. Those people, that whole crowd. All standing around and staring up here. They're waiting for me to jump.
I don't think you're going to jump.
You want to make a bet on that? I got plenty of time, though. That's why I picked this way to do it. No one can stop me. I can take my time. Finally and at last, I'm my own boss. I've been a worm all my life. Now look down there, doctor, and see the worms. Millions of them gawking up at me. Hey, got a cigarette?
No, not with me, but I'll go back in there and get some. If you want to wait.
Oh, sure I'll wait. Like I said, I got lots of time.
Tough one, all right. Say, can someone get me a pack of cigarettes?
Oh, this is Mrs. Lentz, Dr. Christian. She wants to climb out there and talk to Joe. Now, what about it?
I got a right to talk to him. You can't stop me. He's my husband. Why is he doing this?
Joe is very upset now, Mrs. Lentz. You do want us to help him, don't you?
He's crazy. How can he do this to me after all the sacrifices I've made?
Well, now, try to calm yourself, Mrs. Lentz. You can't go out there. In the first place, I don't really think it'll do any good. And then, too, it's pretty tricky out there. One slip and it might be all over for you.
Aunt Tessie was right. He's just no good. Him and that no good sister of his. He's never given me a decent home, a decent clothes, and now this. He can't do this to me. I gotta talk to him.
Not now, Mrs. Lentz. Later, perhaps. When you calm down a little.
Here's a cigarette, Dr. Christian.
Yeah, I better get back out there. Let me know when his sister gets here. Here, Joe. Here are your cigarettes.
Don't come any near. Push them over here.
Emma, your wife is in there now. She wants to talk to you. Will you talk to her, Joe?
No. No, I don't want to talk to her. Tell her to go away.
Well, she feels pretty badly, Joe. Don't you think you ought to?
I said I won't talk to her.
Okay, okay. You don't have to if you don't feel like you want to. Don't stand up, Joe. Don't get so excited.
Sorry I blew my top, Doctor. Let's forget about it, huh? Say, what time is it now, anyway?
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock. The fellas where I work are all going out to lunch now. Wonder if any of them are down there looking up.
What do you work, Joe?
At Graham's. It's a department store. I'm in the shipping department. It really isn't much of a job.
Do you like to work?
Oh, it's all right, I guess. Monotonous is the devil. Well, the guys I work with are a bunch of good Joes. We kid around a lot. Sometimes we play canasta in our lunch hour. I've been there since I got out of the service.
What branch of the service were you in? Paratrooper?
No, Doctor, I was in the infantry. Spent most of the war on the Aleutians. Made the invasion of Atsu and froze my feet. Boy, it was sure cold up there.
How long were you in the Army?
3 years. 3 long years. I used to spend a lot of those cold nights planning how I was going to better myself when I got out. I was going to go to school, get an education. I was going to climb the ladder of success. I've climbed all right, higher than I've ever been. 30 stories up in the air.
Why didn't you go to school?
Oh, but I did. That's how I met Emma. I was taking bookkeeping, and she was in the same class.
Well, that was 2 years ago then, huh?
Yeah. She was living with her Aunt Tessie then. I walked her home from school one night. It was cold and raining. She invited me in for some hot chocolate. Kind of cute then. Her hair was soft and shiny. She used to laugh a lot.
Mrs. Lynch is a very nice-looking woman.
I walked her home from school all the time after that. All of a sudden, a few months later, I found myself married. Just like it happens to a lot of guys, I guess.
Dr. Christian! Hey, doctor!
Excuse me, Joe. I think someone is trying to get my attention.
His sister is here. She wants to talk to him.
Oh? They say your sister Audrey is here. They say she wants to talk to you.
I don't want to talk to her. I don't want to talk to anybody. Why don't they let me alone?
Oh, how about it, Joe? Just for a few minutes.
Well, all right.
Fine, I'll get back in so she can come out and talk to you.
Yeah, sure I can hear you.
Oh, Joey, I feel it's all my fault. Joey, I know it is.
Oh, nuts, it's not. Really, it ain't. I don't feel like that, Audrey.
If I lose you, what'll I do? You're the only one I've got. You've always taken care of me. I don't have anyone else there. I need you, Joey.
Oh, yeah, you need me, all right. Big help I am.
Oh, listen to me. Please listen to me. Everything's going to be all right for me now. I don't need your money anymore. That day I phoned you, I was just scared, that's all. Tim wants to marry me. I'm going to be all right, Joey.
That's fine, Audrey. That's great. Tim's a good guy.
Everything's going to be different now. You won't have to worry about my running around anymore. I love Tim. I'll be a good wife to him. Oh, you do believe me, don't you?
Yeah, sure I believe you.
Then won't you come back to us, Joey?
Why should I? You're all set with him. You don't need me anymore. Now go away now, Audrey. I'm tired of talking. I want to think.
Say, Joe, this climbing back and forth is tough work for an old doctor like me. I brought you some water. Thought you might be thirsty.
Well, don't get any nearer. It ain't safe. Set it down on the railing there, and I'll get it. Yeah, that's good. Is Audrey still crying?
Yes, she is.
Audrey's a good kid. She's a little wild. Maybe she is too pretty, like Emma says. Maybe she runs around too much. But she's got Tim now. She'll be all right.
She still needs you, too, Joe.
Like heck she does. No, sir, I'm through with them responsibilities now. I'm out here at the jumping-off place, and I ain't got a care in the world.
Oh, so you're a philosopher. Well, what should we talk about?
I don't know. Let's talk about you. Tell me about your town. Come on, tell me about River's End.
Well, it's a very small town. There are some wonderful people living in it. It's a very beautiful town. Old houses, big trees, the beautiful river. means a lot to me.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I come from a small town, too. Benton, Iowa. Ever hear of it?
No, I never have. You grew up there?
Yeah. My pop had a little second-hand furniture store. And he got TB and died in the hospital.
And your mother?
Well, Mom went out to do housework to support us for a while. Gosh, she had to work hard. And Audrey was a little baby then, too. I tried to help out. I used to work in the drugstore after school, and after a while, Mom got married.
What was her new husband like?
Oh, he had a farm. Worked real hard. It was all right, I guess. I didn't like it on a farm. After a while, I came here to New York to live. Mom died 2 years ago.
Oh, so that's when Audrey came here.
Yeah, that's right. She came here to live with me and Emma. That wasn't such a good idea, though. Her and Emma didn't get along. Emma told her she was selfish and lazy, and then they had a big fight, and Audrey moved out. I wanted to take care of her, Doctor, but Emma, well, Emma just couldn't get along with her.
I think Audrey's a fine girl, Joe.
No, she'll be all right now. Jim will take good care of her.
But what about Emma?
Oh, Emma will go back to her Aunt Tessie. Seems like she was a lot happier before she met me anyway.
I think Emma really loves you, Joe.
Oh, nuts. I'm just a meal ticket to her, that's
all. Oh, don't stand up like that, Joe. It's dangerous. Hang on, man.
You know what, Doctor? I think it's getting pretty late. I made up my mind what I'm going to do. Now, there's no use your sticking around here. It ain't healthy. Go back in.
No, Joe, I can't. Not yet. Tell me, why do you want to do this terrible thing?
Well, look at that crowd way down there. They want a good show. They're waiting for me. And those photographers across the way, they want a good picture, don't they? Anyway, maybe it's none of your business.
All right now, all right. What's the real reason? What gave you this idea?
Well, maybe it's because I'm a failure. I'm no good for Emma. Didn't even take good care of Audrey. 30 years from now, it won't be no different. What's the use of going on?
Oh, I think you're wrong, Joe.
No, I don't think I am. I woke up this morning, you see, and I started for work. And all of a sudden, it just came to me. I could get out of the whole rotten mess this way. Get on top of things. Down there, I don't have nothing. No home, no marriage. I haven't even taken good care of Audrey. Up here, it's a weight off me. What have I got to lose? I'll just step off here and it'll be all over. You know, I thought I might be scared, but I ain't. It's like I'm sitting on the moon.
But you have a wife and a home.
A home. Two rooms over a drugstore. Too hot to breathe up there in the summertime. No heat at all in the winter. I work every day, 8 hours, see, and then I come home. Emma don't like to cook. So either we go out or else I bring stuff home from the delicatessen. Most of the time, Emma's nagging at me about something. Either about money or clothes. She's always crabbing about something.
Oh, but these are temporary conditions, too. Later it'll be different. You'll have a bigger home. Maybe there will be children.
Children? Gee, I'd sure like to have a kid. A boy. We play ball in the evenings. I take him fishing on Sundays. We'd be real pals.
Well, then.
Well, Emma says people who can't afford kids shouldn't have them. She said they need all kinds of expensive stuff like vitamins and braces and summer camps. Things I ain't ever going to be able to give them.
Oh, if I'd only met you before, Joe. You know what we would have done, you and I? We would have gone on a fishing trip. Would you like that?
Fishing? Yeah, I like fishing.
I know of a sacred place in the river back home where the trout come out to the sun themselves.
No kidding. You like trout fishing?
Oh, you bet. Oh, it's really beautiful in River Bend this time of the year.
I sure wish I could have seen it.
Look, I'm going back there tonight. Why don't you come with me, Joe?
I can't, Doctor. I just can't. Emma and the others, they think I'm nuts. They want to lock me up.
I have an idea. Suppose I go back inside and clear everybody out of the room.
Yeah?
I'll make a deal with them, Joe. They'll get out and you'll go back in that room. Lie down on the bed and give yourself some time to think. After that, if you still want to come back out here, well, that'll be all right, too.
Oh, sure. Fat chance of them cops letting me back out here once I set my foot inside the room.
Well, I'll see that they do.
Yeah, and those people down there. They're still waiting for me. They want to see me jump.
Listen to me, Joe. I'm going back in there now. If I can arrange it with the police, will you do this for me?
Ah, you win, Doctor. It's a deal. I'll do it.
Thank you.
I'm supposed to let that nut come back in his room and lay down, and then if he decides to go out and jump off that ledge, I'm not to try to stop him? Why, it's fantastic. I can't do it, Dr. Christian.
Now, don't you see, Lieutenant Donald? He's not really crazy. He's just a little mixed up. He doesn't really want to kill himself at all. This is the best way. I know it is.
Well, Lieutenant, I have a much better plan. Let him think we're agreeing to this idea, and then we can hide two of your men in a closet. The minute he comes in that window, they can grab him.
But, Alex, I've given my word.
Hey, what about me? Why doesn't someone think of me?
That's been the whole trouble, Mrs. Lentz.
Huh?
It's yourself. You're always thinking of. That's why Joey's out there now.
Oh, how can you talk to me like that? I've given him a home.
You've never given him a real home. You've been too selfish to make a real home. You see, Joey's a very simple fellow. All he wanted was a home and a family, and he wanted to take care of his young sister. Think now, Mrs. Lentz. Have you really been a help to him?
No.
Have you shared his troubles?
But I tried. I wanted to.
Well, things look very black to him now, as they do sometimes to all of us. That's when we need someone to stand by us. Joe doesn't have anyone.
Well, he has me. Oh. Oh, Doctor, I see it now. How stupid and selfish I've been. Please let me go out and talk to him.
I don't think you should. I don't think he wants to talk to you. It might even make him take that fatal plunge.
Oh, but I tell him that I love him. I make him come back to me. I talk him into it.
I think Dr. Christian is right, Mrs. Lentz. I'm going to do this your way, Dr. Christian. If we do try to pull any tricks and he smells a rat, he'll jump anyway. I'm going to tell my men to clear out. Tell Joe Lentz to come back in and take his nap.
So I climbed back out on the ledge. But Joe was standing up and looking at the waiting crowd far below us. He seemed excited, and he was working himself up for the jump. So I talked to him quietly for a while. We talked about the places he'd been and the places he might visit in the future. We talked about who might win the World Series, and we talked about fishing. Finally, he decided to do as I had suggested. He crawled to the window and climbed back into his room. I sat on a chair outside the door of room 3014 and waited. I held my watch in my hand. 5 minutes passed, and then another five. Suddenly, I heard loud voices, his and Emma's. I rushed to his door. They were both out there on the ledge now. Perched precariously beside Joe was Emma. She was clinging to his arm. I leaned out and spoke quietly. Joe?
Hey, doctor, do something. Make her get back in there.
If you go, I'm going too. If you die now, it's because I've killed you.
Oh, gee, Emma.
Oh, Joe, I've been stupid and selfish and horrible, but it's going to be different now. If we both live, I promise
you... Make her go back, doctor. It's dangerous out here.
Not unless you come back too.
But I don't get it. Why are you doing this, Emma?
It's because I love you so much.
What did you say?
Joe, I think you're the only one who can make your wife come back in.
All right. Let's go back in, Emma.
Now, will you please tell me how she got out there in the first place? Why, I was guarding the door myself.
Well, I hid in the closet. Joe came in just like he said he would. But he didn't lie down. He just walked back and forth, back and forth. Well, once he went back to the window and looked down again. Well, I knew I had to do it then. The next time he walked away from that window, I slipped out of the closet very quietly, and when his back was turned, climbed down on the ledge. It was my last chance.
That took a lot of courage, Mrs. Lentz.
Oh, Joe. Joe, you're safe. You're all right. I said I love you, and I'm going to prove it. We're going to have the home you want and children, and I'll patch up things with Audrey. And, oh, Joey, I'm going to make you happy, really happy.
your trip to New York, Dr. Christian?
Yes, it did. Now do you see why I said I had excitement enough for 1 week?
Yeah. Well, what happened to Joe and Emma?
Well, of course, there were the usual difficulties with the hotel management and the police. But after all, Joe had really committed no crime, so Lieutenant Dunnan finally released him.
Hmm. What happened then?
They insisted I should go home with them for a little celebration, which I did.
What about Audrey?
Well, she called up Tim. He came around and joined the party. Oh, he, very nice fellow. He and Audrey are going to be married right away. I have invited them to come to River's End when Joe gets his vacation.
Oh.
I know you'll be good enough to show the girls around while we fish.
Of course. Oh, Dr. Christian, I really envy you.
Why, for heaven's sake?
Well, because you attract adventure. I've never seen anything like it. Everything interesting happens to you.
Maybe, Judy, that's because I find life itself a wonderful adventure.
And the curtain comes down on another Dr. Christian prize play with our star, Gene Hersholt, waiting to greet you. Judy, here's a question for you.
Hmm?
Who's right, the man who uses Vaseline hair tonic to keep his hair looking well-groomed, or his friend who uses it to keep his scalp in shape?
Well, that's easy, Art. The answer is both, because Vaseline hair tonic gives double care to both scalp and hair.
Right. And fellas, if your hair is hard to comb, or you notice a little loose dandruff, or you're troubled with both, then you probably have dry scalp. Let me recommend using a little Vaseline hair tonic each morning. Loose dandruff and that tight, dry scalp feeling will be checked pronto. Your hair will look better, your scalp will feel better, because Vaseline hair tonic supplements the natural scalp oils. It makes your hair easy to manage, gives you the well-groomed look everyone admires. So tomorrow, sure, get a bottle of Vaseline hair tonic. Yes, hair looks better, scalp feels better, when you check dry scalp with Vaseline hair tonic. Now, here is Gene Hersholt.
Thank you very much. The author of tonight's prize play, Don't Look Down, is Mrs. Toby Raymond of St. Louis, Missouri. She attended Washington University in St. Louis, is married to Lawrence Raymond, who is employed at McDonnell Aircraft, and she has a 10-year-old daughter. Next week, we plan to present The Class of 1908 Elects by Mary Makin of St. Albans, New York. We invite you all to join us again next Wednesday evening, same time and same station. And until then, I'll say good night.
That with the coming of cold, harsh weather, many people find that their skin becomes dry. Sometimes the hands are cracked and chapped, or the elbows, knees, and feet get rough and sensitive. When this happens to you, just try rubbing on a little Vaseline petroleum jelly. You'll agree it brings blessed relief, because it soothes so quickly. And before you know it, that dryness has disappeared. You'll find that dependable Vaseline petroleum jelly has scores of other uses, too. Relieves baby's chapped skin, helps to promote quick healing of minor burns, and protects against infection when the skin is broken or cracked. Why not get a jar of Vaseline petroleum jelly tomorrow? Better still, get two jars, one for the medicine cabinet and one for the kitchen. And remember, when you buy, to look for the trademark Vaseline. That trademark, owned by the Cheeseboro Manufacturing Company, is your guarantee of absolute purity.
Thank you, Rosemary DeCamp. Mark Gilmore speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
October 25th, 1950, Dr. Christian, Don't Look Down. Well, that's all I have for this evening. Now I turn it back to Mike, and he'll hand it over to our other host, Rick Spurgeon. Mike, take it away.
Wow, Rob. That was a good show. Good program you picked tonight. And now we switch it to Woodstock, Ontario, Canada, and my good friend Rick Spurgeon. So, Doc, tell us what you're playing for the next half hour.
Thank you, great and noble leader. It's my turn for the last half hour to take us home on tonight's Michael's Saturday Surprise. And the surprise tonight is to almost everybody. Even Michael and I haven't talked about it too much. I don't really worry too much about where to find things. That's why I don't plan that far ahead, and we don't talk about them. There's so much OTR out there that I have no trouble during the course of a week running across something that I can say, aha, there's an interesting thing to do. And tonight's aha is Boston Blackie from 1948, in which he is framed for the killing of John Cummings. Probably no relation to Burton. A good program in itself, but the other reason for it is that it features one of my favorite OTR actors right through the first golden age and into what came afterwards. And also it's one of Michael's. Now, that's good enough reason for me to play this, so let's play it right now.
You're making a mistake, I tell you. A terrible mistake.
Yeah, I know, Miss Fursley. According to Blackie and you, I'm always making mistakes.
How could Blackie have killed a man here in town last night when he was in Central City last night?
You're the one who keeps telling me what a genius Blackie is. He must have found a way. Blackie hated John Cummings, didn't he?
Cummings hated Blackie.
Same thing. Cummings was found dead. A witness picked out a picture of Blackie.
But Inspector...
You say he was in Central City. You know, I say maybe he was. Well, there he is now, getting off the train.
Oh, that's not Blackie.
Nice try. You coming?
Yes, I suppose so. But you'll be... Blackie, run! Blackie!
I should have known better than to trust you. Blackie's not running. Probably he doesn't trust you either.
Hey, this is some reception committee. Where are the banners and the band? Hi, Mary.
Hello, Blackie, but Blackie...
Inspector, this is an unexpected pleasure.
You don't know how unexpected it is or what pleasure it's giving me. Blackie, I'm arresting you for the murder of John Cummings last night.
I was out of town last night. If I get out of town again, maybe Cummings' partner, Eddie Manton, will be found dead, too.
Go ahead, kid. Make jokes. Be happy. But you're going to have to prove you were in Central City last night. Not about anything I've got. You won't be able to do it.
You know, Faraday, there is just the slightest possibility that you may be right.
It's smooth. 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 And you're sure it's pure.
That, my friends, was the voice of a man, an enthusiastic friend of CV, describing what he likes about Champagne Velvet, the beer with the million-dollar flavor. You, too, will find that CV is smooth from foam to finish. More than that, from your first sip of the rich, creamy foam that billows on top of your glass, right down to that last delicious drop, you'll find CV bright and sparkling, light and lively, with a clear, clean taste that makes you sure it's pure and stamps it as a beer of real premium quality. Premium quality that costs you no premium in price.
Yes, sir, it's smooth. Just as smooth, and you're sure it's pure. There is no finer beer.
And now back to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
That you, Eddie?
That's right. Hi, Lila. Where's the newspaper?
That's a fine greeting. Hi, Lila. Where's the newspaper? How'd everything go?
Down at the railroad station?
Mm-hmm.
It went fine.
Oh, I'm glad.
Where's the paper?
Over there by the chair. You mind if I sit alongside and read over your shoulder?
Sure, I mind.
Huh?
But come on, if it'll make you happy. The
feels good.
Eddie, I saw a pretty dress in the window of the store today. It was red with a purple collar.
How much?
$50.
Okay.
Oh.
I feel so good about the cops picking up Boston Blackie that you can have two of them.
Oh, that's swell.
How's that, huh?
Oh, that.
What's funny?
That cartoon in your newspaper, right there.
What about it?
Well, it shows a fellow with wings playing a harp, and he's saying, I wonder what I'm doing here. I guarantee that that's exactly what Boston Blackie is saying right now in jail.
Of course I don't have my railroad ticket, Faraday. I gave it to the conductor on the train.
Sure, I know, Blackie.
When that call you placed to Central City comes in, the clerk at the Rex Hotel will tell you that I was right there from yesterday noon until this morning.
What were you doing there?
Nothing.
You could have stayed here and done that.
Well, you would have resented the competition. Well, I got a call from a man who said he was in trouble in Central City. He asked me to go there, wait in the Rex Hotel, and he'd call me last night.
Sure, sure.
He didn't call.
You say you spoke to the clerk at the Rex Hotel, huh?
He's the clerk, bellboy, the elevator operator. Only there isn't any elevator. You'll find that when that...
Okay, Blackie, hold it. Faraday, homicide.
Hello, you called Central City?
Yeah, you're the room clerk at the Rex Hotel, huh?
That's right.
Did a man named Boston Blackie check into your hotel yesterday afternoon?
Well, friend, all I have to tell you is nobody's checked in here in 2 days.
Haunted house, huh?
So long.
I'm right again.
Look, Faraday, that guy's a little wacky. I was there. I registered at that hotel.
Yeah, I know. Williams!
Now, Inspector, don't do anything you're going to be sorry about in the morning.
Williams!
Yes, Inspector.
Hand Blackie over to Sergeant Matthews.
Yes.
Tell him to lock him up.
But, Inspector...
What are you waiting for, Williams?
Well, nothing. Matthews is in the outer office. Come on, Blackie.
Okay, I'll go. But, Inspector, it's going to be awfully tough for me to forget this.
You're going to have a lot of time to try. Hand him over to Matthews, Williams. You stay here.
Okay. Hang on, Matthews.
Faraday,
okay.
If I had my...
Well, Inspector, how did I do on the telephone?
Great, Williams. Blackie really thought I was talking to Central City. Now I can keep him locked up, let the papers have the story that I arrested him, and then I'll be able to get the real killer, John Cummings.
You mean Cummings' partner, Eddie Manton?
Well, after Manton reads I've arrested Blackie, he'll be off guard. I'll be able to get something on him without Blackie around to interfere.
Well, he's helped you on a lot of cases, Inspector.
Yeah, of course he has. But this one I'm handling alone. I know that witness framed him. I'll keep him locked up. Then when the time comes, he can call the real room clerk at the Rex Hotel in Central City, establish his alibi, and everybody will be happy.
Except Blackie, because you didn't let him help you.
I can handle this without him.
Yes?
You know, Williams, this was a pretty smart stunt of mine. Even Blackie would admit that.
Maybe.
Maybe I ought to do smart things more often.
Well, now, there, Inspector, is something I'm pretty sure Blackie would admit.
You want to see a new trick, Mr. Manton?
If you don't quit bothering me, I'll show you an old trick. How you can leave a room without opening the door first.
Well, you wouldn't do nothing like that to a nice door, Mr. Manton.
Are you going
to
shut up?
Yeah, sure. What are you reading?
This thing in the paper about how Boston Blackie was arrested for my partner's murder. Did you read it?
Who can read? But, Mr. Manton, that's what we wanted, ain't it? For Blackie to be arrested for Cummings' murder.
It sure is.
Certainly.
It's the reason I made the phony call that sent Boston Blackie to Central City.
Yeah.
I had my girlfriend Lila bribe the hotel clerk there to deny he ever arrived.
Right.
And then fix it so that a supposed witness to the Cummings murder would pick Blackie out as the killer.
Well, look, Mr. Manton, when the police go working on that clerk, won't he spill about us? Well, I mean, he's a thief and all that, but he'll talk if the cops put the pressure on him.
Maybe he'd talk if he got a chance, but he isn't going to get a chance. You and I are going to Central City tonight to make sure of that.
Welcome.
Welcome to Central City, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Rex Hotel.
Thank you.
In short, welcome. What can I do for you?
My name is Manton, Eddie Manton.
I see.
A girlfriend of mine named Lila was in to see you the other day.
Oh, yes, she was. Indeed, she was. Welcome to you, Mr. Manton. Welcome.
Save one of them welcomes. You ain't met me yet.
Oh, that's right. I haven't. My name is Billings.
Well, yes, what else would it be? Let's cut out all this nonsense. Billings, you haven't told anybody that Boston Blackie was here in this hotel last night.
Oh, of course not. I even ripped the page out of the register after he'd gone. And
then nobody could possibly know he was here, eh?
Not unless I told them.
That's all I want to know. Okay, Spoke.
Sure, Mr. Mack.
Now, listen here, you two.
Good work, Spoke. Now, you'll never be able to say that Blackie was here.
I was kind of sorry to kill that clerk, Mr. Manton.
You were?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he looked like the kind of guy who would have picked a card if I asked him to.
What can I do, Blackie?
I don't know.
There must be something that will get you out of this jail.
Look, Mary, I could have gotten out. I could have slugged Matthews as he was bringing me here. I could have lifted the keys from the jailer when he brought me my breakfast. But why get Matthews or the jailer in a jam?
Yeah. Inspector Faraday won't talk to me.
At any other time, that would make you a very lucky girl. Right now, I can't understand any of this. I imagine Faraday wants to keep me off the Cummings murder, but this is going to extremes.
I don't understand why the room clerk in Central City didn't tell the inspector you were there, Blackie.
I don't either. Say, Mary, there is something that you can do for me.
Oh?
I'll tell you in a second. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm trying to figure out what Faraday's plan is. I just can't help wondering what it is that the long arm of the law has up its sleeve.
Where's Spoke, Eddie?
I don't know, Lila. Probably trying to show somebody a magic trick. What do you want with him?
Well, it's no fun being around you. All you do is read the newspapers.
It's the only way you can keep informed of what's going on.
Oh, is that so?
Take a look at this picture of Boston Blackie.
Mm-hmm. Hey, he's cute. Maybe I am missing something not reading the newspapers.
Baby, you didn't miss anything in your whole life.
That's right.
My ex-partner, Johnny Cummings, used to take pretty good care of you.
Sure did.
And now I'm doing it.
Yeah, after you took care of Johnny Cummings.
Any complaints?
Not this season. You want me to get it?
Might as well. It's probably Spoke coming back with a new trick.
How are his old tricks? Pretty good?
Who knows? Whoever let him do one.
Yes? I'm Boston Blackie's girlfriend, Mary Wesley. I want to see Eddie Manton.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Get out of my way.
Hey, Eddie, this game is...
Lila, please. Your language?
What did I say?
Hello, Miss Wesley. And what can I do for you?
Will you get Joe the gent?
Lila?
Mr. Manton, Boston Blackie sent me. He's in jail. He wants to make a deal with you.
Oh?
We don't make any deals with anybody.
Can't you put a muzzle on this thing, Mr. Manton?
This thing?
Yes,
I'll bring you out. I can't say people. Aren't you?
I'm going to rip your blonde hair off by its black root.
All right. You
better look out, this.
Now, I'll put it to the wall. Break it up. Come on. Break it up. That's better.
Why, she's gone. Mr. Manton, will you keep your friend away from us so that I can talk to you?
Ask me.
She doesn't have to. All right, Lila, wait in the next room.
What?
I said wait in the next room. Well?
I'm not budging a step out of here.
Lila?
Okay. Gotta fix my makeup anyhow.
Miss Wesley?
Well, now maybe we can talk.
Now maybe we can sit down, too. Hmm?
All right.
That's better. Now, what were you saying about a deal Blackie wanted to make?
Well, this is it. Blackie knows he's been framed. He's pretty sure you framed him after you killed your partner, Cummings.
He is.
That's right. He knows you and Cummings were running a racket, and that you had a yen for Cummings, half of the profits. Not to mention Cummings' girl.
Blackie is very smart.
Well, he's smart enough to send me to make this deal with you. You call off the heat on him, and he'll lay off your racket when he gets out. Are you interested?
I certainly am. But not in Blackie's plan. Just in his girl.
Okay, Blackie, the whole thing was a frame-up to keep you.
I knew it. I knew it.
But Central City just wired me that the Rex Hotel clerk who could identify you
was murdered.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That I have to stay here in jail till you bring him back to life?
Blackie, I thought as soon as I grabbed Eddie Manton, I could let you spring your alibi and release you. But right now, you have no alibi.
It's all right. I sat up in that hotel room without seeing or talking to a soul. You are going to let me out of here, though, Faraday.
Yes, I am. I'm going to let you out. But, Blackie, the only way you can clear yourself permanently of the Cummings murder is to prove Manton did it.
Which you haven't been able to do.
No.
Great. Now, I've got to think of a way to get Manton.
And how?
If I get him in jail, it'll get me out of a jam.
Listen for just a few seconds to a man who knows good beer and who likes champagne velvet. The beer with the million-dollar flavor.
Bright and sparkling. Yes, sir. Light and lively. Yes, sir. Clear and clean. Yes, sir. There is no finer beer.
And that's a fact. Go where you will, pay what you will. No better beer than CV can be had at any price. No better beer than CV can be made at any cost. CV's famous formula provides for only the more costly premium quality materials. Then, CV's careful processing and controlled aging gives you a beer that you're sure is pure. CV's flavor will tell you all of that. You'll find it bright and sparkling from foam to finish, robust and full-flavored as a real honest-to-goodness beer should be. CV's flavor will tell you that you're enjoying a premium quality beer at no premium in price.
You're sure it's pure, and it's just as smooth.
And now back to Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Inspector Faraday, in an effort to keep Blackie from investigating the murder of John Cummings, pretends to discredit Blackie's alibi that he was in Central City and puts Blackie in jail. Cummings' killer, Eddie Manton, murders the only man in Central City who can alibi Blackie. And Faraday lets Blackie go after pointing out to him that only by proving a case against Manton can he clear himself. As we return to our story, Eddie Manton is with his girlfriend, Lila.
After that, Miss Wesley grabbed my hair. You just stood there laughing.
What did you expect me to do, Lila Slugger?
Well,
you know I never hit a lady.
Without taking your hat off first, you mean. Now, look, Eddie.
Look. You know, Lila, I'm starting to suspect that you're getting jealous.
Me?
That happens to be very dangerous.
It'd be pretty interesting. You were putting your newspaper down.
Yes.
I've never been able to make you do that before.
Lila, I said it was very dangerous for you to be jealous.
Oh.
You're too well informed on my activities. And you might talk out of turn, so...
Hey! Who are you clipping with that newspaper?
You?
Johnny never hit me, and you're not going to either.
That is a matter of opinion. I'm going to do what I like, and you're going to do what you're told.
And you were the guy who said he never hit a lady.
That's quite right. I never do hit a lady.
I let Blackie go.
You had to, Inspector. After all, you know he didn't kill Johnny Cummings. Everybody knows Eddie Manton did.
Sure. But I'm in a rough spot. Blackie is, too.
Yeah?
The newspapers will run both of us ragged if we don't grab Manton.
Oh, Blackie will do it. I've got a lot of confidence in him.
Maybe you'd like to work for him, Williams.
Oh, I didn't mean that, Inspector Faraday. I meant that I think Blackie will help us.
Oh, you did, huh?
Well, sure. That's all I meant. After all, he's pretty smart.
What am I, dumb?
Oh, no, Inspector, but Blackie gets around.
Well, I suppose I sit here in my office all the time.
Well, I didn't mean that. I meant that he knows all the angles.
Yeah, you think I'm a square, is that it?
Oh, now, you know that isn't so, Inspector. Gosh, just because I think Blackie's pretty good, don't hop on me for it.
Everybody thinks Blackie is so wonderful that he can solve any case. I wonder why I don't think so.
Well, don't you, Inspector?
No.
Then why'd you let him out of jail?
Mary, you say that while you and Manton's girlfriend were struggling, Eddie just stood there laughing?
Mm-hmm, that's right. And then he separated us and sent her out of the room. And she didn't like it one bit.
That's the best news I've had since Faraday let me out of jail.
It is?
Sure. Do you remember the dress this Lila was wearing?
I couldn't forget it. It was bright red with a purple collar.
Mary, you don't know it, but those colors are beautiful.
They are?
You don't know how beautiful.
Oh, yes,
Lila, she's a blonde, huh? Is she very blonde?
As blonde as she can get.
Beautiful words, Mary, just beautiful.
Well, they aren't to me. What is this all about, Blackie?
Just an idea that came to me while you were talking, Mary. An idea I'm going to develop into a project which will project Eddie Manton into prison.
Oh, it's easy. You give me a quarter, I close my hand, open it, it's now a nickel. Now, how did I do that, huh?
Who are you talking to, Spo?
Huh? Oh, nobody. Nobody at all, Mr. Manton. I was just rehearsing.
I get it.
Okay.
Maybe Lila. I haven't heard from him in a couple of hours. Yes?
This Eddie Manton.
Who's this?
Friend of yours. If you don't believe it, listen.
To what?
You got a girlfriend named Lila Dean.
So?
So I was just picked up for a little rap myself by the cops. And I'm in Inspector Faraday's office when I hear a phone ring and I hear a dame named Lila Dean make a date with Faraday to talk about you.
You don't know what you're talking about.
No? Okay, so forget about this. Don't mean nothing to me.
Now, wait a minute. Tell me more.
She made a date to meet Faraday up at a crossroads in a little cabin off the main highway. Said she didn't want to talk to him in the city, but it don't make any difference to me if you do something about it or your girlfriend.
You know, Mr. Manton, while you're driving, I could show you a new needle trick.
Oh, no.
Well, I just happen to have a spool of thread and a dozen needles in my pocket.
Never mind, Spoke. I've only one thing on my mind right now, and it hasn't anything to do with tricks.
It hasn't?
It has to do with a double cross.
Well, that tip about Lila you got on the telephone could have been a phony, Mr. Manton.
I'll know in a minute now.
Yeah, we both know.
Now, there's the cabin. The guy on the phone told me about you, see it?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's hard to believe that Lila would be spilling to the cops.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Take a look up the road. Isn't that a police department car parked there?
Hey, yeah, it is.
A fellow on the phone told me Lila arranged to meet Inspector Faraday up here where she wouldn't be seen, she thought.
Hey, Mr. Manton, the cabin looks dark.
Quiet. We're getting close to it now.
Yeah.
We'll know in a minute whether this is on the level or not.
Lila turning rat. Why would she do a thing like that, I wonder?
A dame gets sore, she's liable to do anything.
I suppose.
I'm going to look in this window.
Well, I'll keep my eyes open in case this is a trap to get us, huh?
Get us? For what? Nobody's got anything on us, though.
Okay.
Hmm.
Hey, what do you see?
It's kind of dark, but there's a candle on the table. I can make out Inspector Faraday, all right. He's talking to a dame. A blonde dame.
Uh-oh.
Her back's to me, but she... wearing a red dress with a purple collar.
Hey, Lila's got a dress like that.
Don't I know it? Didn't I pay for it? Okay, Spoke, is all I want to know. That tip I got was a McCoy, all right. Lila's telling everything she knows.
Yeah, it looks like.
But she's going to have to be available later on to back up what she says.
That's right.
If she doesn't keep talking after I get through with her, Spoke, there'll have to be a ventriloquist in the room.
Anybody ever tell you you were cute, Blackie? I like your hair.
I'm glad you do, Lila. I kind of like it myself. Wouldn't know what to do without it.
Well, you could say something nice to me.
I'm being nicer to you than anybody has ever been.
What?
I'm up here to save your life, Lila. Eddie Manton is coming here to kill you.
Oh, I know. You said that when you first came in. I thought I'd heard all the routines by now, Blackie, but that sure was a new one. Come on. Move over a little closer.
Now, wait a minute.
Well, who knows? You might even like it. It's happened before.
I have no doubt about that.
What am I, Poison Ivy?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
But from where I'm sitting, I doubt very much whether I'm going to find out.
Well, if you're not on the make, why are you here, Blackie? No kidding now.
I told you. It was to stop Eddie Manton from killing you when he gets here.
Well, all I know is I don't have an appointment with Eddie until later, and then I'm due at his place. So if you want a book to read or... Somebody's at the door.
Is Eddie a key to this apartment?
What do you think? Eddie?
Yes, it's me.
Wait a minute, Eddie. I'll open the door.
I'm getting into the next room. Don't worry about anything.
I'm coming.
You're a little late.
Eddie, you want to hear the most ridiculous...
Shut up.
What?
You talk too much. Especially what? The cops.
Me? I never talked to a cop in my life. Eddie, keep away from me.
You loused me up with Faraday, didn't you,
now,
Lila?
Just because
I slapped you around a little,
no.
You ratted on me. You know too much, Lila.
I don't know what you're talking about, Eddie.
Sorry, kid. This neck of yours was the nicest thing about you. But I've got to do this.
Sorry, I've got to do this.
Blackie!
You said it.
Blackie was going to kill me. But why?
Lila, as long as you live and he's out of jail, the knowledge you have about him will be a threat to you.
What can I do about that?
You can take a walk down to headquarters with me and let a stenographer take down your statement about Eddie Manton.
I was an eyewitness to the killing of Johnny Cummings. I heard Manton and Spoke Daniels say they killed the clerk in Central City, and all the information I gave before this was given of my own free will and volition. Well, I guess that's all, Inspector Faraday.
Did you get it, Williams?
Yes, Inspector. I'll have it typed up.
Good. Blackie brought in Manton. The boys will pick up this Spoke Daniels, so we're all set.
I want to thank you for your help, Lila.
I want to thank you for saving my life, Blackie.
Okay, so thank each other someplace else. Beat it, both of you.
Might not be a bad idea, Inspector. Except that Mary is waiting for me outside.
Oh, in that case, maybe I'd better go. You know where to find me if you want me.
You're talking to me, I hope.
Yeah. Only I'd much rather it was Blackie who remembered it. So long.
So long, Lila.
Well, Blackie, we did it.
Sure, we did it.
Especially me.
You practically framed me for murder first, just to keep me out of the case. And I had to get your killer so I wouldn't go to jail. But you did help, Faraday.
Sure I did. I went up to that cabin in my squad car with Miss Wesley, didn't I?
And you put on a swell act. Say, how did you like talking to Mary when she was wearing a blonde wig?
I didn't mind the wig so much, but that dress. It was no dress. It was a mess.
It was enough to fool Manton into thinking it was Lila talking to you after I phoned him and pretended to be a friend of his tipping him off. I had an idea that he tried to kill her, and she'd be scared enough to talk. Now, be honest, Faraday. What would you do without me?
Blackie, I don't know. But I'll tell you something. I'd sure like to have a chance to find out.
If you want a beer with flavor, a flavor that's delightfully different, try the million-dollar flavor of Champagne Velvet Beer. It's just as smooth.
Now, there's a suggestion for the person who has yet to try Champagne Velvet. You'll find CV to be the smoothest, most mellow beer you ever tasted. More than that, you'll like its brightness, its sparkle, and the clear, clean taste that makes you sure it's pure. In addition, you'll enjoy the rich, robust, and full-bodied flavor that proves CV's premium quality. Premium quality that is yours to enjoy at no premium in price. That's why our enthusiastic friend says,
try it. Just try CV and you'll agree there is no finer beer. You're sure it's pure. And it's just as smooth. Just as smooth.
And now, here's a glimpse of what happens in next week's Boston Blackie Adventure.
And there goes another one of those Ralph Bell examples. Hopefully you like him, because I think I'll be doing him from time to time. I like playing my favorites. It's my show. Well, part of it is. So I'll do what I want. Unless you tell me differently, because I'm a wimp. Anyway, that's it for my chunk of tonight. If you're so inclined to want to email me, And I don't know exactly why you would when you have Michael out there, but maybe you want to swear at me privately. In which case, Richard M. Spurgeon at yahoo.ca. Having said that, hopefully I'll see you next time here as we see what comes up in our little surprise package. And now it's back to Michael to take us the rest of the way.
Hey, Doc. Great show. Really enjoyed that one. Well, guys and gals, this'll do it for another edition of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Hope you guys enjoyed the programming tonight. And remember, we do take requests. So you can feel free to email me at mikeamelie at earthlink.net or my good friend Rick Spurgeon at richardmspurgeon@yahoo.ca. So, this will do it for tonight, and hope to see you back here next week. Take care, everyone. You all have a good week, and good night.